Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 62 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about, I'm not worried about LGBTQ, I'm worried about FGTTQ. And what that stands for is Facebook, Google, TikTok, Twitter, and Quora. And a little bit also Reddit, you could almost say. First, I want to ask, how you doing, America? Are you doing all right? You holding up okay? Some of you may be sick with the coronavirus and probably are sitting here thinking like, my entertainment options are pretty slim. All the talk shows are off. Have you noticed how all the talk show hosts are basically ripping me off? They're all shooting videos at their house. You got Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon and Trevor Noah. They're all like, hey, I'm doing my videos on my couch. I'm like, that's Alabama Liberals thing. All my YouTube videos, I take place in the same poorly lit, ultra cramped kitchen area in my apartment. They're kind of still in my thing, you know? And you'd think some of these celebrities, I mean, they could do a little bit better. They got these big ass Hollywood Hills houses and put a little bit more razzle dazzle into things. Maybe have some confetti or a banner in the background. It's like we're watching the Russian version of an American talk show where everything's stripped down to the gills. They haven't shaved. They're wearing hoodies and shit. It's just like, you know, you could still put a little bit of effort into it. I mean, basically my whole thing hasn't changed at all. All these people are being like, there's going to be a recession. You could lose your job. People may not get to work for 10 weeks. I'm like, well, I hadn't worked in 10 years. So, I mean, I'm pretty much out of the curve on that one. People are like, pull your kids out of school. My son was literally kicked out of kindergarten. So I already caught you there. People should buy gold and guns. You had me at guns and you had me 10 years ago. Nothing's really changing for me except that all my survival supplies, my kids are at home and they're eating them out. I'll be like, well, I've got a 2-year supply of potato chips. My son's like, you got anything else to eat, daddy? What the fuck? You ate all the potato chips. Hell, I mean, you put something out and in 5 minutes it's gone. They've eaten it all. So they're just ravaging through my survival supplies, my bunker supplies. I'm like, man, this 6-month supply, this is going to last about 10 days at this point. Trump's saying, well, everything will be back to normal and by Easter weekend, which I think is dreaming and completely delusional, but they're desperate to deny that a recession is on its way. A recession is absolutely on its way. It's already started. And I'm going to do a separate episode really all about that, like how the recession's coming, how to invest, things like that. So just to let you know that that's in the pipeline, don't run out and do anything crazy with your money, because I'll be talking about that shortly. But first, I really see something that's even deadlier, which is all this misinformation on social media. The title of this episode comes from the fact that all these people are worried about LGBTQ. And when I say all these people, I'm probably not talking about people that listen to this podcast. That's not really the demographic that's listening to this. It's people that are terrified of America sinking into the moral abyss and gay marriage this and transgender that, and be like, my son Steve, he was married with a kid 2 years ago. Now he's a woman. It's Stevina. I mean, what the hell's going on with America? So a lot of people are very worried about gender fluidity, gay marriage this, and Pete Buttigieg scares the hell out of me. He could be president of the United States. So, but of course, all that's overblown. Millennials don't really share those fears. I'm much more concerned about Facebook. And Facebook also owns Instagram. They also own WhatsApp. They own a few other smaller apps and things like that. So really, when I say Facebook, I'm talking about the whole, something like 90% of social media is owned by Facebook, one company. But people say, well, yeah, Facebook sucks. That's why I'm on Twitter. Twitter is even worse. I mean, Twitter is objectively worse. And I'm going to explain that in just a minute and kind of break that down and everything, even though I use Twitter more than Facebook. So I mean, in a way, people are like, well, aren't you being kind of a hypocrite? I'll break that down in just a minute, too. With TikTok, we have something that might not be familiar with this. Honestly, I didn't know what it was until about 6 weeks ago. That's because its user demographics are very, very young. They skew incredibly young. I think the average age is like 15 or something like that. And you could sort of say that about Snapchat. So even though I'm confining it to the four big ones I want to talk about, Reddit and Snapchat and some of the others, you could absolutely say the same things about. Then you have Google, and Google scares me for different reasons, because they own YouTube. And YouTube, you have a lot of false information. You have people with YouTube channels that, I'm going to be honest, they have 100 times what Alabama Liberals subscribers are, my users are, maybe a million times. You see people on YouTube and it'll be like 16 million people. And you're like, how is it even possible? Like, how can you find 16 million people who want to see it and watch a guy talk to a camera on YouTube? It almost doesn't seem possible. These late night talk show hosts who are hosting all their shows from their couch and everything like that, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they don't have 16 people watching their stuff when they do a professionally produced show at 11:30 p.m. with all these celebrity guests and like Jimmy Fallon doing like, hey, let's play Boggle with Madeleine Albright. Sure, I'll watch that. That could be fun. Like, I'm going to guarantee he doesn't probably get the kind of viewers that a lot of the bigger YouTubers get. Then you go down to Quora and people are thinking, well, why would you put Quora beforehand with the rest of this list. And that's one that I'm very, very active on, probably even more so than Twitter. Those probably my two most active is Twitter and Quora and a little bit YouTube. It just has all this false information on it. So first, let's break down exactly what's wrong with Facebook, because I almost feel Facebook gets too much of the attention. I think people focus on them. We saw a lot of Democratic senators talk about, you know, we should break up Facebook. I don't really think that, because I'm kind of looking at it like, you know, a monopoly is Standard Oil or Carnegie Steel, something where it really is impossible for somebody to compete. There are competitors for Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, every site that I'm mentioning right now. Majority of them are not owned by Facebook. Only Instagram and a couple others are. So there is a way to make money by being like Facebook. Same thing as Google technically has token competition, and Microsoft Bing and Yahoo Search and things like that. It's just a lot of people don't really use that. If you're a privacy fanatic, you might use DuckDuckGo, which they say doesn't track you. I kind of feel like we've seen a lot of this stuff for a lot of the privacy things. Hey, use Snapchat if you're worried about privacy. And then, oh, wait, they keep a record of everything you've ever sent. So the whole reason it exists is wrong. Maybe DuckDuckGo goes on the level. I use it sometimes if I want to look up, government sensitive facts, porn. But I mean, other than that, there's not a lot of reasons to use DuckDuckGo. And I still feel like there's some way that it tracks you. I'm like, how could they know an ad for interracial porn if DuckDuckGo's not tracking me? Facebook, literally, the only way they can make money is by ads. And I've seen people describe it the way before, where it's like, you're not the customer for Facebook, you're the product. The advertisers, they're the customers, and you're the product because they want to reach you. So really, you could call it the world's largest advertising platform. And what makes Facebook a little bit more tricky than some others is because I kind of feel that, unlike Twitter, which we all know is a bunch of fakos, with Facebook, some of those people are real, some of those people are not real, but the ones that are not real, they're almost indistinguishable from people that are real. Very hard to tell them apart. Hey, I'm John Smith, and I agree with what you said about Joe Biden. Well, that's great, John Smith. You know what you really should do, though, is go to this podcast editing platform that boosts your thing, and it'll help you advertise that podcast. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's a lot of people that'll come on as real people, really start gradually selling you stuff and things like that. And we actually see telemarketers use that trick more and more. Somebody will be calling for telemarketer and be like, hey, how's it going, Brody? What's up, my man? And I'm like, oh, pretty good. How's it going? This is John from AT&T. Dude, want to upgrade your package? Like, they try to be a little bit more personalized and try to act like they're your buddies, and then eventually it comes out what they're doing. And of course, now all these companies are desperate for people, for dollars and everything, which is why I get stuff from Carnival Cruises all the time. I've cruised on a Carnival cruise before, and so I must have gotten 15 mailers in the last 2 weeks. I'm like, you know, I know you're desperate for customers and you're talking about a government bailout, but maybe if you don't spend a lot of money on TV ads and mailers and stuff. But with Facebook, I think some of the data mining, it's definitely there and it's how they make money. But some of those concerns are a little bit overblown, because you have people come in and be like, Facebook, they take all your personal information and they make it public. Well, that's kind of the whole fucking point. You set up a profile and you say, here's my birthday, here's what I like, here's the favorite movies, here's the groups I want to belong to, here's the groups I'm associating with, if I'm married, if I'm single, here's my political preferences. I mean, the whole fucking thing is data mining. Why are you setting that up unless you want people to look at it? And they'll be like, no, I just want my friends, people I know, to look at that stuff. But the whole world looking at it? No way, Jose. I don't know that many people who know every single Facebook friend they have. Like my mom, she probably knows everybody that she's Facebook friends with. Some older people, they probably are like, if I don't know you, I don't accept your thing. But if you're under 60 years old, I don't see that many people really doing that. I mean, you see somebody say that and I'll be like, you know all 900 of your Facebook friends. You've met them all personally. You know them well. Oh, yeah, sure. I'm like, no, you're fucking lying. There's no way. When I had a personal Facebook account, 1,000 people I probably personally knew, less than 200. Out of that 1,000, maybe 500 were really beautiful women. If you were an attractive girl, I would friend you in 2 seconds if you sent me a request. Those could be people selling stuff, or bots, or people data mining, or Russian trolls trying to get a better sense of how Americans interact or what they really like. That's why the promise of social media, in a way, I know a lot of people are skeptical of the whole process in general. It can work, and there are promising things. When I was on Facebook, I joined it when it first got started, because you could say 2004, 2005, I went to Auburn University, and at that time, to be a part of Facebook, you had to have a college email address. So I was freshman in college. Everybody's talking about this Facebook thing. They'll be like, hey, you can talk to girls. The Auburn track team, right, which was like the gold standard for me, like these beautiful women, some of them Jamaican or whatever, they were on the Auburn track team. I'd be like, oh my God, I want to talk to them so bad. You could join Facebook and they'll be like, you could talk to girls and everything. I feel like my college years were a little bit wasted because I spent a lot of time on this platform talking to beautiful women and not actually meeting them. There's a lot of people that they would talk to guys on Chat Roulette. At that time, Yahoo was a little bit bigger than it is now. So they'll talk to guys on all these different online platforms. And then like, because it's all centralized at Auburn. And they'd be like, well, you lived a mile down the road. Do you want to meet up? Be like, no, that's okay. You know, you know? So they're talking to guys because they're bored. And that's why they're talking to him. It eventually does work. The college girlfriend that I liked the best was a beautiful Nigerian girl who was like an aspiring model and everything like that. I met her kind of through Facebook. I had seen her in person and saw her out. She saw me. We locked eyes or whatever. And then, because this is how much Facebook changed millennials, I went home and immediately was like, let's see if I can find her on Facebook. Like, you didn't think to go to her at the party or at the, we met, which was a modeling event where she was modeling. I didn't think to go up and talk to her then. I was like, let's go home and check Facebook and see if she's on there. It was kind of a system that didn't totally need to exist, but it was all of our communications were going through this. So it was almost like an airport for communications. And so all these big airline stocks that are now in trouble, but of course they'll get bailed out because airlines are essential to the way that we travel. Facebook wanted to become that for the way we communicate, especially for millennials and younger people, which is who advertisers, as we said in yesterday's episode, that's all they care about anyway. It's just that 18 to 49 demographic, especially 18 to 35. So Facebook's like, if we've got all these young people using us and that's all that advertisers care about, that's really going to be great. Other than my wife, the second longest girlfriend I ever had was a girl who lived in Florida and I lived in Alabama. Beautiful girl, Haitian girl. I liked her a lot. We met through Facebook. And so you could say, well, that's a relationship that never would have happened without Facebook. Now, of course, it was long distance, even though we were together for almost a year. I only physically saw her like 4 or 5 times. That like Facebook's connecting people. And I hate to say it, but I was kind of a Facebook addict for a couple of years out of college. I graduated 2008, right when the recession was raging. There were no jobs, nothing that you could find. You'd go to a job fair and there'd be a line out the door just to sell phones at Verizon or something like that. The guy in front of you is like, I'm like, hey, yeah, I just graduated from Auburn. I'm ready for a job. He's like, that's great. I was the CEO of Burger King and now I'm in line to sell phones at, you know, like all these great workers had experience. Like there's 45-year-old people that had all this experience and they could get them for pennies on the dollar. So that's where all the jobs are going to, not people fresh out of Auburn that don't have a lot of experience. So for 2008 to about 2010, I mean, I didn't really have a lot going on. I'd find part-time jobs here, temporary jobs there. I was stringing together paychecks. It was a very depressing existence because go through high school and you think like, oh man, one of these days, man, I'm going to be a baller. I'm going to be up there. Things are going to be different when I'm in college. And then you get into college and it's like, okay, girls are exactly the same. Man, when I get out of college, I'm going to be rich. Things are going to be exactly the same. Then you get out of college and you're just as broke and lonely as ever and be like, okay, well, when I'm an adult, you know, and then it's the same thing. And then you'd be like, okay, well, when I'm in the nursing home, man, these girls are going to want this dick. Really disappointing because you thought high school would be better than middle school, college would be better than high school. And that all kind of was. You don't see it at the time, but it's like, yeah, college was definitely better than your high school relationships. But then outside of college for that whole 2-year period, it's like, okay, I don't have a job. I'm in rural Alabama. I'm having to live home with my parents. Pretty much the last thing in the world I wanted to be doing or thought I'd be doing. And I'm bringing this up now because I think the next recession is about to happen, just like 2008, possibly even worse than that. If there's any young people listening to this, I just want to tell you, it will be rough for a couple of years and you probably will get depressed, but there will be a light at the end of that tunnel. You'll come out the other side of that. So now that the new recession is starting, I'm thinking about kind of what it was like for me in that recession period. And for about 2 years, I was just on Facebook all the time. Some of the most beautiful women you've ever seen in London, fucking Texas and New York and Seattle and all over the country, really. And they'd give you your phone numbers and then I'd call them or whatever. And I'd talk to them over the phone, going like that for about 6 weeks or some were like a couple weeks. One girl I talked to for over 2 years over the phone before we finally met and we met in person and then she didn't feel a lot of chemistry. So it was almost like, wow, I've talked to this girlfriend and I'm using air quotes for 2 years. And then we meet in person. She's like, nah, I'll take a pass. And it's almost like, wow, I wish I had the 5,000 hours that I've spent over the phone or doing whatever. You know, I kind of wish I had that back. After the girl in Florida, I had a girlfriend in Texas. After that, I had a girlfriend in Seattle, Washington. And so it kind of kept going like this from Facebook. But of course, these are all long distance relationships and can't really work out long term. So I do think I used Facebook more, probably got more value out of it than most people get out of it. More currently, I know Facebook's got a marketplace, kind of like eBay, but you can sell stuff. So I do think there's some, at least some value. Personally, when I post things to Alabama Liberals Facebook page, a large majority of Alabama Liberals people are either iTunes, because I think I have a lot of traffic on iTunes, some of it on YouTube, not a lot of it. And just a lot of people just go straight to alabamaliberal.com. They get on Google or they do whatever, or they use their browser and they go straight to the website, coming from anywhere else. So a lot of the social media apparatus I've created, it's kind of for nothing. Some people come from Facebook, but then you get to Twitter, where I'm 10 times more active. I might as well not be. If you go to my stats inside Alabama Liberal, you'll see that the number of Twitter people, YouTube subscribers are not even 200 people. Twitter followers are almost 2,000 people, but barely any click on articles, watch videos, listen to podcast episodes. I mean, very few come from Twitter. And I know some people listening to this, maybe they follow me on Twitter and they're real people and everything, but a lot of people on Twitter are fake. And I think when you really break it down, if you would ask me like, okay, which stock do you want to own out of the social media companies? I wouldn't say Snap, because I think we've seen things like Snap come and go and their fads and people get over them. I mean, already Snap was very, very geared towards young people. Now they're already going to TikTok. In a year, it'll be something else. And then Twitter, I would say, is worthless, because once advertisers really start paying attention to the fact the majority of the people who use it are Russian bots in St. Petersburg, like St. Petersburg troll farms and corporate bots and people selling stuff. And a lot of people on there are not real. And once they really break that down, be like, well, Facebook, they have 1 billion daily users. And even though some of them are fake, a lot of them seem to be real. We can actually reach people on there. Twitter, they just seem kind of fake. It's kind of turned politics into a video game, because you have people that say stuff and then they get the likes and they get the retweets. But likes are really worthless. People chasing likes are chasing fool's gold. If I tweet something out and I get one single like, and I tweet something out and I get 100 likes, but 100 likes are worthless. You can't go to a store and be like, hey, can I buy some food? Sure, you got any money? No, but I have 100 likes on this tweet that I have. Like, they're not a valuable currency. And I think Twitter costs people more jobs than it gets them, because a lot of people be like, I'll set up my Twitter account and my tweets will be so brilliant and so dazzling that I'll be able to get a job, or I'll leverage that somehow. 10 times out of 10, really, they tweet out something offensive, and then it'll be like, oh, we have to fire you, because this tweet that you sent, people find it offensive or they get bent out of shape. And also, when people talk about political correctness, I kind of see that both ways, because people say, well, there's too much political correctness in this world. The problem is that when you say something like, yeah, you know, I don't like all the political correctness or whatever, you say that in front of a conservative, they'll be like, exactly, Obama should go back to Kenya. I'm like, wait a minute. I wasn't saying that. Like, you say that in front of the wrong person and they immediately interpret that into, okay, he's ready to start carrying the tiki torches outside Charlottesville. You know, you want the door cracked and they want to blow it off the hinges. And it's so subjective and really depends on who you're talking to. So you said that about political correctness, and a lot of people take that as like, all right, we found another brother down for the cause. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is really not what I'm talking about. And I find a lot of people who are really obsessed with political correctness, they're racist. Like, that's just the bottom line. You know, like, they talk about political correctness and I talk about it sometimes, but when you're obsessed with it, like when that's the single biggest thing driving you towards Trump, the Republican Party, or voting that way, it's almost like you don't care about money. You don't care about the environment. You don't really care about anything, except you want to be able to go out there and say, well, black fathers are bad and the black community doesn't have good role models and black people, they can't get their, you want to be able to criticize groups you don't belong to, and you don't like people pushing back on that and being like, well, you're just a bigot. Adam Carolla is obsessed with political correctness, but you listen to some of what he actually says that people push back on, and it's like, no, you are a bigot. Like, they're not making that up. Ignorant and bigoted about communities you don't belong to. So I do kind of feel that some people who really get bent out of shape about that, I think it's overblown a lot of times. Like in 53, I have that whole episode about ultra PC, woke, whatever, 2019 Los Angeles, you can still find absolutely nobody to give a shit about a case of actual racial discrimination and harassment. And I'm talking about reporters and the media, people you think would jump on it. You can still be locked out in the cold on a story like that. I think what people are really talking about is sometimes called performative wokeness. And really where you find that is Twitter, because literally people, it's like an outrage machine. You know, they say people sniff glue or they huff paint. It's almost like they're huffing outrage. They're getting off on their own outrage. They're inhaling that. They're totally up their own ass. And that's why, like, I'll give you an example. A couple of days, literally 24 hours before Kamala Harris was going to endorse Joe Biden, 24 hours before she endorsed him, there was a Twitter, and she's a total fake, she's a phony and everything. Her idea of political activism is to talk shit about people 24 hours a day and then have a Twitter account that leaks to a Venmo. She's not an activist. She's not a political person. She doesn't know anything. She doesn't organize, doesn't contribute to political causes. She doesn't volunteer. Her whole thing is to send out tweets. Most of them are erroneous. That same day she was attacking me, it was literally talking about Elizabeth Warren didn't pay her campaign staff. That's not true. And I'm not somebody who likes Elizabeth Warren, but I don't want to go out of my way to make stuff up about her. Just a lot of stories like like that. It's a lot of stuff that's fake. It's false information. It's stirring people up. It's dividing them. It's pitting them against each other. It's not a real person who's trying to help the Democratic Party at all. Like, it's only going after other Democrats and stuff. And the Twitter account links to a Venmo or a PayPal or a Cash App or something like that, so you can give her contributions. This is not a real thing. This is fake activism. That's not real activism. That's not really helping anything. Probably turning more people off the Democratic Party than bringing them in and trying to build a coalition. But she had tweeted something about Amy Klobuchar was out there working for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris was slacking. And then I wrote in, I was like, yeah, you know, Kamala Harris, she was supposed to endorse Joe Biden back in January. Because she then turned on me and was like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, entitled white man. And then all these trolls came in and were like attacking me and saying stuff. And the reason is because I used the word supposed to instead of projected to. So when I say supposed to, those of you from the Southeast, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When I say, is it going to rain today? Well, it's supposed to rain today. And that doesn't mean it must rain today or the clouds owe us rain or we're entitled to rain. That means projected to. And I don't even think they believe this, but they took it to mean like Kamala must bow down to Joe. She owes him something, all this shit. All of them are saying she doesn't want to endorse him. She doesn't want to be his vice president. She's not going to endorse him. 24 hours later, they're proven wrong. She endorses him. I'm proven right. Even when I'm right and they're wrong, they still keep arguing about it and everything. Not one of them came out and said, yeah, our bad. We made a mistake. We misjudged you. You were right. We were wrong. Your prediction was right that she was going to endorse him. No, they just totally spun it off into something else. But for 24 hours, really less than that, for 18 hours, I felt that sting of you're in the wrong. You're an entitled white guy who's so stupid and, you know, you don't know anything and you're trying to talk about stuff. You felt that sting of like people criticizing you for something, even though it was totally out of proportion, totally wrong. And so when all these comedians, when they talk about, you know, ultra PC audiences and people getting out of shape, I don't even personally think they mean people who go to their shows. I think if a comic's in his zone and he's doing his thing, I don't think there's a single person there laughing along and being like, oh, this is outrageous. I better get up and leave. Call an Uber. I want to get out of this crowd before everybody else leaves. I think that they take their sets and then Twitter gets a hold of them, and people who don't go to comedy shows and don't pay to watch them and are not their fans, then they get bent out of shape. That's the thing. All these movies are changing stuff. They'll be like, oh, Mulan, we had to change where in the animated version of Mulan, her love interest was also her commanding officer. And in the Me Too moment, we thought that was inappropriate. So now they're two separate characters. She's got one love interest and one commanding officer. And I'm like, the people who would have cared about that and raised hell about that are not going to go watch Mulan. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, they don't have kids. They don't have really a lot of shit going on and stuff to do. They want to get on Twitter and they want to say Mulan is ruining Me Too and this is disgusting and this is a bad image for young girls, even though they don't have kids of their own, and they want that to trend. And if you can start something and you can trend, our generation has been brought up to believe that is as good as gold, that that is valuable somehow. If I ever started something and it trended, it would be big for about 5 hours. And then the next day there would be a new outrage and people would move on. And I would look at that and think, well, that was absolutely no value to me at all. I mean, if I wrote an article in Alabama Liberal and 10 people go and they click on it and they read it, I don't get any ad revenue. If 1,000 people go and they click on it and they read it, I might get 10 cents. So, I mean, really, there's not that big an advantage. It's not like you started a Twitter meme, and then all of a sudden you're going to be on Real Time with Bill Maher and Rachel Maddow, and you're going to be interviewed by all these. You can look at that and say, like, how many people have ever started a hashtag, and then Bill Maher's like, I want to have them on Friday's show to talk about it. Like, that never fucking happens. Like, you have to do decades, years and years and years of work and really break through in that way to get on shows like that. You kind of have to have a professional job working for them and a lot of bylines. I'm discovering that the hard way. You can't really start something like Twitter and have a huge Twitter account. I mean, there's people on Twitter today have 1 million followers and you've never heard of them. Like, they've never been on a single television show, to TV media, which is where the real money is. And maybe they do it because if they write a book on Amazon and they self-publish it and self-release it as an ebook, maybe out of 1 million Twitter followers, they can get 100 of those people to read that book. They make $100. It's really kind of a waste of time. And I say that, but because it's a video game, because it's addictive, because you're sitting there thinking like, oh, I can send out a tweet and I can get likes and I can get retweets. Because of that, I still keep using it. Like, I say that right now and I'll edit this podcast and I'll post this podcast. And where will I go? I'll take it to Twitter and I'll send that link out, because it's like a slot machine. You still think like, okay, the last 500 Twitter links to articles and videos and podcasts that I've done, they haven't hit and become viral. But this one, This is going to be lucky number 7. I can feel it in my bones, and I'll still do that. And I'll keep doing it for a long time. It may make me look like a hypocrite, but I'm fully acknowledging it is addictive. And when you start arguing with people on Twitter, usually it just makes me look bad because the people I'm arguing with, you'll look at them. If there's somebody, like the girl I'm talking about who turned on me immediately and was wrong about Kamala Harris endorsing Joe Biden, you know, who has 25,000 followers, who has more followers than I do, they block you immediately. But if it's nobody and they have 8 followers and a fake picture, they have a picture of a cat or Deadpool or a cowboy or something like that, they're going to keep it going forever. I mean, there was a Bernie Sanders fan called like Commie Cat Says or something like that, and they would have kept arguing me about Sanders forever. But I mean, it's a fake profile. So at some point you're sitting there looking like I'm wasting 2 hours of my life to argue with a picture of a cat that has a communist hat and a hammer and a sickle and a monocle, and it says Commie Cat Says. I mean, even if you win a debate like that, you're going to look like a damn fool. You'll be like, yes, I finally showed up, Commie Cat Says. My wife's going to be like, what's wrong with you? Why are you spending time on this? Why are you broken arguing with a fucking picture of a cat that's clearly a fake profile? So there's so many fake profiles, and they're the ones who like to keep stuff going forever because they got nothing to lose. I mean, nothing to lose. I've been trying to get an interview. It's Rick Wilson. And I've been trying to get an interview with Rick Wilson for a while because his books are fantastic. I really love both of his books. Everything Trump Touches Dies, Running Against the Devil, How to Save Democrats Against Themselves. I think he'd be a perfect interview guest for me because I'm a fan of his. He's got the same R-rated style. He can say whatever he wants to. We were in negotiations. He was agreeing to it. And then I think because I was an idiot and I got on Twitter when I was very, very sick, and also right before coronavirus hit, and I'm arguing with all these different groups of people, it kind of makes you look bad, and it kind of makes people afraid to take a risk on your chance on you. So even though in every single Twitter fight I've had, in my opinion, I've been in the right. I haven't been proven wrong in any of what I've been saying. It can still kind of make you look overly petty and down on their level and everything, and there's no benefit to it. Once you know that, then you might think, well, let's check out this TikTok thing because everybody's talking about how that's more positive, like engaging experience. You know, Instagram, people are just posting pictures of themselves humble bragging. Like you'll see a celebrity and they'll be wearing fucking diamonds and sunglasses and laying in a hot tub eating strawberries and champagne being like, yeah, just a regular Sunday. Hashtag love my life. Or something like that. I mean, all this humble bragging that you see with people being really obnoxious, they say, well, that doesn't happen on TikTok. On TikTok, you have to show off your actual skills. Social media is the Miss America pageant, and Instagram is the swimsuit portion. TikTok is the talent portion. They want to see you singing. They want to see you doing something engaging. I'm looking at that and I'm just like, how is that different than Periscope, or how is that different than any of the other live video apps that we've seen? I don't think it is really, but that's what I'm talking about, the dangers of investing in a company like Snapchat, where it's like, well, they had Periscope, they've done YouTube Live, and they've done all these different things that come and go. And I mean, remember Google Plus? That was going to be the Facebook killer. This Facebook is sort of kind of impressive that they've been able to stay at the top of social media for so long, because social media changes all the time. And Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking up Facebook is kind of absurd, because Standard Oil, Carnegie Steel, you could say those are like useful things. Social media is kind of, I know there's a lot of advertising dollars, but it's kind of worthless. Since I got kicked off of Facebook, and I mean my individual account got deleted, and then I wanted to get back on, and Facebook says, well, you're not using your full name. You have to scan your driver's license. I'm not kidding. They asked me to do this. They wanted me to scan my driver's license and upload it to them and prove who I really was and give them all this information. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to do that. So my personal account got deleted and I didn't care to renew it because I thought I'm not going to give them all this personal information and shit. That's insane, because look at what Facebook does with it. They spread it all over the globe. And so I just decided not to get back on Facebook with an individual account. Alabama Liberal has a Facebook page, but for all they know, a guy named Frank the Beefeater in Moscow could be running that thing for all they know, because I'm not going to give them all this personal information. I'm not on it and it doesn't affect my life at all. Like, it doesn't matter to me whatsoever. With and steel and things like that, you sort of have to use those. They're useful things. We're going to break up Skittles. They've got a monopoly on something you shouldn't be eating in the first place. You know, like, if you don't want to use social media, you don't have to. Also, Facebook has competitors. It's a little stupid. Basically, about going in there and saying, I want to break up the unicorn union, which is keeping all the other fairy tale creatures from breaking through. It's something you could definitely live without. It doesn't affect my life not to have it. With TikTok, I believe it is Chinese spyware. It's a company that has connections to China. And so letting an entire generation grow up, and this is mostly Generation Z that's using it, letting them grow up with something where every move they make is being fed back to the Chinese government, I could see where that'd be kind of a huge problem, because it's data mining. Just like Coca-Cola wants your Facebook account information so they can know how better to market their products to you, China would also find it very useful to know, hey, what turns Americans on? What turns them off? What do they care about? What are they passionate about? Which political candidates do they want to vote for? How can we subtly manipulate that to a candidate that is more preferable to us? If a candidate comes along and is like, hey, you know, China spread a global pandemic that killed hundreds of thousands of people, and Spain just leapfrogged them in terms of fatalities. Italy now has almost triple the deaths from the coronavirus that China has been reporting. How's that possible when Spain and Italy have 1/20th the population China does? I mean, I smell a fish here. If a political candidate were to start talking about that, then they might think, we don't want them to be reelected, so we'll use all this data that we collected from TikTok to better know how to market our propaganda to American audiences and get that person voted out, how to manipulate it in that way. What really squeezes Americans? What do they really care about? How can we increase the economic pressure? And of course, how better to market their propaganda to them. And there's a ton of Chinese propaganda all over social media, and a ton of Russian propaganda all over social media. And a lot of people you think are real, they're fake. That kind of brings me to Quora. I'm active on there, I answer questions, and I don't really know why I do. You know what it is? I think that Quora appeals to people like me and like people in the media. You see all these celebrities, the reason they're hosting stuff from their couch, they need the spotlight. They crave the spotlight. If their attention's not on them, they can't stand it. Oh, Gal Gadot's gonna organize a sing-along video, and Lolo Jones is trying to lift her couch, and all these different people are losing their minds talking about, oh, it's so tough to be in isolation for a week or two. And I'm like, yeah, because you're narcissists. Like, you crave the spotlight. You're egomaniacs. I'll admit it to an extent. I like the spotlight. I would like it to shine on me a little bit more than it has. It's addictive to have that spotlight. So that's why all these celebrities, I'm like, why can't they just shut the fuck up? Like, why can't Vanessa Hudgens not talk about, oh, we got to miss Coachella? This virus is bullshit. I mean, yes, some old people are going to die, but who cares? That's embarrassing. Like, why can't you just not say anything? Why can't you just not shoot a video and release it? Why can't Evangeline Lilly not go on social media and talk about business as usual? My kids are going on play dates. They're going to school. I let them eat Play-Doh. Who cares? You know, vaccinations? What's that? They're spreading bullshit public health information. Even Elon Musk, who's a brilliant man, he gets caught up in the social media trap of being like, coronavirus panic is dumb. This is a week before it really started to shut down the economy, and it started to, a lot of business people are saying that because their stock is tanking temporarily. It'll rebound. Like, why can't you just shut up? Like, why can't you just not say anything and disappear during that time period? And people listen to this saying, Alabama liberal, you're a hypocrite of hypocrites. You're doing multiple podcast episodes in a single week, which you've never done before. Absolutely. But at the same time, I'm not telling people, hey, coronavirus is a hoax. Go out there and live your life. Rent that jet ski, buddy. Take that flight across the country right now. Who gives a shit what happens, you know? I'm not spreading bogus public health information. Quora gives people a way to feel valuable. People like them and people care what they have to say. One person gives your answer an upvote. It's like, hey, that feels pretty good. Some of mine have gotten 100 upvotes, and it's like, damn, you know, that feels pretty good. So what people feel on Twitter when they get all those likes and retweets and stuff like that, Quora is kind of exclusively, I don't see a ton of women using it. It's mostly like white males. Some of them are older. You get a lot of World War II kind of people like that in there, but like, well, the Maginot Line and how Rommel was defeated. So you get a lot of stuff like that, like a lot of like amateur historian. I call them citizen historians. You get a lot of people like that. Some people try to revise and, you know, what happened in certain historical instances, but like the segregation wasn't that bad. You get a lot of people that have their own agendas in Quora, but you get a lot of overseas fascism. And that's why Quora is spammed with comments being like, what's the worst thing about democracy? How is democracy secretly evil? And those are all being spread by China and Russia. And what they do is they ask a fascism-related question like that that basically makes it look like democracy's bad. Fascism may be better. Authoritarianism sure is more efficient, don't you think? And then they get their own trolls to come in there and their bots. And then they just, here's the 50 worst things America has ever done. And of course, that's the downside of a democracy, is that you can point to our mistakes because our mistakes are transparent. If people want to go back and they want to be like slavery and Bay of Pigs, and even last week, some of Trump's tweets and comments, like every bad thing we've ever done, it's all out there and it's public and it's open for display. And Americans talk about it and we can criticize it. That's wonderful. That's part of why we love this country so much. So we're being transparent in that way. But China comes along and's like, actually, we've had fewer coronavirus deaths than Italy and Spain, who have 1/20th of our population, and the virus started here, and we lied about it since November. There's no fucking way that's true. They're incinerating bodies left and right. There's no way they're not covering up the actual number of people who died. And it's also probably that they're being more transparent with some countries than others. Russia has not even had 5 coronavirus deaths. As of today, they've had, I believe, 2 coronavirus deaths in a country that has a bigger population than Italy and Spain do, and borders China. and has historically close ties with China, where people can are a little bit more free to come back and forth. So it doesn't quite make sense that Europe and the United States, Iran, and all these countries that don't border China would be devastated, and all these countries around China that share borders, and it doesn't make sense that they're experiencing so few deaths. And I think China's being more transparent with countries that it trusts and giving them heads up and sharing information with them, and then with other countries that they don't want to look bad. As I said with Chernobyl a couple of episodes ago, they're obsessed with not being embarrassed. So they're not sharing as much information with Europe and the United States in countries where they don't want to look bad and they don't want to be shown up. Their whole thing is, we want to be the economic miracle. We want to be the next United States. And that's not going to look so good if they had a plague start in November and then they actively covered it up for 3 months and didn't tell anybody else what was going on. But when you get on Quora and then people ask questions like that and then they spam them, that's kind of related to TikTok. And then it's all about, how do we undermine democracy? How can we make it look as bad as possible? Basically, people inside China and Russia, if they really sat and thought about it and been like, wait a minute, they say Vladimir Putin is the world's richest man. He's stolen more than $100 billion from Russia. He's looting all this shit. I mean, all the oil money. He gets his beak wet with all that, gets a nice little taste of it. And China, like, we're totally suppressed. We can't choose where we live and how many kids we have for a long time. And Xi Jinping, he's cracking down more every single day. If they really sit and think about it, why does that make sense when the rest of the world, India, Europe, the United States, all has a say in who their leaders are, what they can do, way more freedoms than they enjoy in China and Russia? Well, it doesn't make sense. So their whole thing is, we have to make democracy look as bad as possible. We can't appeal to people if they think democracy works. And so if we can just spread as much false information and make democracy look bad and show that it's inefficient to not have one person like Trump making all the decisions. In America, I think our love of democracy had been waning for a while. And some of that is because of dysfunction in Congress and Mitch McConnell, and things like Barack Obama as president, and Mitch McConnell somehow gets to control who he appoints to the Supreme Court, can hold that up for a single year. Those checks and balances, people get very frustrated with that, because no matter what party you're in, you just want to rip and run. If you're Republican, you don't want to have to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi. And if you're Democratic, you don't want to have to sit there and get Mitch McConnell, who's never going to agree to a single thing. No matter what you pitch to Mitch McConnell, he's going to say no. What if we gave every American a steak and it won't cost them a dime? No. No way, we're not doing that. So, I mean, no matter what you pitch to him, he's going to veto it. He's not going to be for it. And I understand where that disconnect, that makes people very frustrated with democracy in general. But I think Trump is showing, who is an aspiring tyrant, I think he's showing how necessary it is not to have one man control the entire country. If he was to say, well, you know what, I'm going to run for a third term and I'm going to lift the statute on that, and then after I get done, Don Jr. is going to take over. I think we're seeing the flaw in that. Like, every single day it becomes more apparent how bad that would be, where even Dr. Fauci sometimes seems embarrassed to be seen with him. You know, all these CDC experts, it's all they can do not to roll their eyes every time he speaks. I do think democracy is the best system in the world. I do think it's vital and necessary. Some people say, well, we wish we had more than two parties. The two-party system is what really sucks. Problem with that is, I think it would do nothing but hurt Democrats. Like, I hear AOC say things like, well, it's ridiculous that me and Joe Biden are in the same political party, and really Democrats are too big of a tent. She's saying that as though Republicans haven't been in control for 50 years. They've had the Supreme Court for 50 years. They've been 6 out of the last 9 presidents. Only 2 times in the last 50 years have Democrats controlled both the White House and the House and the Senate. The first 2 years of Clinton's term, the first 2 years of Obama's term, 4 years out of the last 50, we've had the triumvirate. And none of that time we've had the Supreme Court. So she's saying that as though Democrats are equally powerful as Republicans, and we're not. We're almost fighting from behind. We're the underdog party. People only turn to Democrats when things get really, really bad. Joe Biden in November, he's going to be the third Democratic president in a row to inherit a sky-high deficit and a recession. Bill Clinton came in 1992. There was a recession that year. Barack Obama, famously, 2008 recession. He was elected that year. There's going to be a recession this year, and Joe Biden will have to come in. And all these Republicans who are spending money like drunken sailors, a $2 trillion deficit package today, a $2 trillion stimulus today, in a month, it'll be more trillions. This is the beginning. There'll be trillions of dollars. He'll come in, there'll be a $25 trillion to $30 trillion debt, and then the Republicans will look at him like he's the asshole. The second he comes in and there'll still be a recession going on, it'll be like, oh, here's this recession and here's these spendocrats. What are they going to do? Barack Obama came in during a sky-high deficit where Bush squandered all this money and had a recession rage, and 6 weeks later, the Tea Party gets started. And that's because Republicans know that at a time of recession is really no time for austerity. That's why they're spending money like drunken sailors right now. Austerity in a recession is kind of the dumbest thing you could do. It'll lead to a depression. We learned that with Herbert Hoover, another Republican. There has hasn't been a Republican president to not have a recession since the 1880s. So every time there's a Republican, we have a Herbert Hoover had a depression, Nixon and Reagan and the Bushes, they all had recessions. Trump could have a recession that could turn into a Great Depression. But Democrats, the second they come in, they have to simultaneously balance a raging recession and a sky-high deficit where the Republicans have spent all the money, and Republicans who are all of a sudden debt hawks. Where the hell was that when they were in the... The thing with Cora, when I see these fake questions and these bad answers, and people can be experts who don't know anything, and that's kind of the problem. And people would say, well, don't you fall into that class? You're not like Ezra Klein out there. In my opinion, I know as much as Ezra Klein does. A self-admitted poor student who just happened to be in the right political campaign and the right elite media jobs, and all of a sudden gets to be a pundit and gets to be an expert. In my mind, there's no difference between me and Matt Welsh, except that my predictions are actually right, which his never are. So as I've talked about in several episodes past, yes, I'm out of that elite media feedback loop, but that still doesn't mean I'm poorly educated, and that still doesn't mean I give people bad advice, like the coronavirus is a hoax, or now's a great time to pull all your money out of the stock market. As a crash is happening and as a recession is happening, you'll definitely take a loss if you pull it all out right now and then put it in gold. But that also doesn't mean I would say, hey, you know what you should do? Go out and buy shares in Carnival Cruises, AMC Theaters, Delta Airlines. There's going to be a lot of places that are really affected by a coming recession, so it matters where you put your money. And I'll get into that when I talk about the economy. It bothers me that people can ask a question on Quora like, are vaccinations a hoax? Absolutely. And then some guy who's 50-year-old, probably fired teacher. A lot of school teachers who were fired for their personal beliefs are on Quora, and they post 10 different charts. These charts are bullshit. Half the time you look at this stuff and you're like, they made this. Like, they went on Microsoft Office and they made these charts themselves and they put that out there. And you find so many Republicans that be like, well, actually, Bill Clinton, he was responsible for the 2008 recession because he allowed the repeal of Glass-Steagall. So much of that shit happens where Republicans take no accountability whatsoever. Why did the Iraq War happen? Because Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton voted to give him authorization to go into Iraq. Bush lied about that war, schemed to get it, manipulated it, had Colin Powell go to the UN and lie about it, faked intelligence that a lot of senators didn't have, was determined to attack Iraq. The second 9/11 happened, says, how do we get to Iraq? And Richard Clark's like, they had nothing to do with 9/11. That didn't make any difference. So he wanted that war. He was going to get that war whether Congress gave him approval or not. They would have just done like JSOC and shadow wars. And because Democrats, some of them in the Senate, gave him authorization, they're equally responsible. It's like saying somebody knocked at the door, I let them in, they came in, took a shit on the rug, broke all my furniture, but it's my fault because I didn't anticipate when I opened the door that it wasn't the mailman, it was a mass burglar instead. Same thing with the recession. 2008 recession, they say, well, if Clinton hadn't repealed Glass-Steagall, there's no fucking way at the time you're repealing Glass-Steagall, you know Bush is going to be the president and he's going to wreck the economy. That's not how that works. Like, just giving Republicans authorization to create chaos doesn't make you personally responsible for the chaos they create. And I guarantee you, by the time Trump's out of office, they'll say, well, really, this was Nancy Pelosi's fault because she wasn't able to convince more Republicans to impeach him in the Senate. So technically, it's their fault for not getting rid of him. You got to take some responsibility. The party who's always talking about personal responsibility, a woman got pregnant, doesn't want the kid. Well, she has to have the kid anyway. That's what you get for having unprotected sex. Well, you also defunded all the birth control, and in her town, birth control is illegal. Well, that's what you get for wanting to have sex in the first place. Your fault now. You got to raise a kid for 18 years and be poor the rest of your life. The party who's so obsessed with personal responsibility never takes it upon themselves. And we see that with all the Republican senators I talked about in 60, who will somehow escape any blame or any criminal charges or not even have to resign, probably most of them. When you look at social media, they fuel that. I mean, there's a total right-wing apparatus. All the websites I'm talking about, and Google. First of all, you have YouTube, and that's where a lot of the Republicans that can't get big. Fox News looks at somebody like Milo Yiannopoulos, and they're like, no, we can't do this. We'll take a pass. He's too extreme even for us. They have to go to YouTube. Or they do like Alex Jones and they create their own little thing. They basically do videos that they self-release. And people might say, well, how is Google as responsible? It's not just their YouTube content for Google. It's also their search engines. Because right now, if you go to Google search and you type in Alabama liberal, I should be the first site that pops up. And I'm not. You got to go all the way to the second page practically, or at least on my computer, go all the way to the second page to find Alabama Liberal. Some of you may have to go to the third page. So the first 10 results for Alabama Liberal, they have nothing to do with my website, which you'd think you'd be able to find that. And instead, you might find a video of like Ben Shapiro, Alabama Liberal, in the YouTube search engine. You go to YouTube and search for Alabama Liberal. I'm like the 10th result or whatever. The first video is Ben Shapiro, a Republican, arguing with a liberal from Alabama about abortion. Because of the algorithms and because of the way that they can sometimes favor Republicans. And if they ever don't, they'll start screaming about it. How come when you type in ham sandwich, you have to go to the second page to find Ben Shapiro arguing with a ham sandwich, and that should be the first result? That's liberal media bias. Illusion is that all these tech companies are loaded with liberal workers who were all scheming against Republicans, and not, in fact, the truth, which is algorithms, which have no political bias. That's almost like anti-political bias when it's like Alabama Liberal has to go to the second page of YouTube search or the fifth result on YouTube to find himself, and all these other people are promoted over him, mostly conservatives and mostly Republican voices. Very, very few people ever go to the second page of a Google search. It's almost like if it's not on the first page, it doesn't exist. This is why Yelp and some other companies, they've sued Google because they're saying, like, our results are pushed to the second page. We compete with Google because Google has reviews on things, and so Yelp technically is in the same space as them. People talk about bringing up Facebook. See, the Facebook breakup, because it's like Edward Snowden's out there like, hey, everybody's trying to steal your personal information, and it's like, how can they steal something that you're giving away voluntarily and freely? Edward Snowden didn't get that people are not worried everybody's spying on them. They're not worried that, like, people are listening to what they're saying. They're worried that nobody's listening. Everybody wants to be famous. Everybody wants the spotlight on them, or at least if they're on social media all the time, that's part of what they're craving. They're craving attention a little bit. So I don't think people are totally worried about that. But with Google, where you have search engines and algorithms and things like that, they can really sync your YouTube channel like they have for me, or sync your website and the search engines for that, especially if you compete with them, which they're not just in social media, they're in reviews, they're in all these different categories. They are a little bit of a monopoly, same as Amazon. And I'll probably spend another episode talking more a little bit extensively about that. But for now, I just want to share one last final story. Don't believe everybody that you're contacted with on social media. 4 years ago, when we started this podcast in 2016, I was contacted by a Bernie Sanders supporter, like a fanatical Bernie Sanders supporter. And basically, this guy, just all he cared about was Bernie Sanders, but he would pretend to be a fan of Alabama Liberal, talk about doing a good job this, I like your stuff that. Basically, if you were reading a lot of his comments, it kind of felt like he wasn't totally listening to the podcast, to be like, hey, have you ever done an episode about this? And then you just did an episode about that 2 episodes ago. And this went on for months. And I think subtly they were trying to steer me more in a pro-Bernie direction. I think if it looks like all of your fans, which I have a lot more than one fan listening to this podcast, but if it looks like all your fans are very pro-Bernie Sanders, then you need to try to avoid hitting him. And I think he was subtly kind of doing that in a way, because I would find myself pulling punches on Bernie. And then when I started the podcast back up, he went on Alabama Liberal and commented on, he wrote something about Bernie Sanders, and then I responded to it. It was about Bernie Sanders, basically, he's more pro-civil rights than I give him credit for. And then I responded to that, talking to, you know, and gave a fully detailed response. And then right after that, he responded, Bernie Sanders is the one, Hillary Clinton was a centrist and she lost, and progressives, they're going to win. I mean, his answer had nothing to do with what I had just responded to. And a lot of our conversations were like that. Like, I could say something and then it was like it didn't totally make sense, his responses. And I noticed that on his Twitter account, he only hits Democratic figures. The DNC's evil, Nancy Pelosi sucks. If he ever came on my tweets, like, I said Nancy Pelosi shouldn't still be the Speaker of the House when she was reelected because I wanted to see some new blood, somebody younger. He liked that. But anytime I would ever criticize Democratic Party figures, he would like that. And then I noticed it wasn't a lot of stuff about actual Republicans. Now, if this guy's in Alabama, as he claimed, and Alabama's fully Republican rule, top to bottom Republican rule, you would think it would be kind of suspicious that he would only have interest in hitting the head of the DNC or the DNC itself or Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or Hillary Clinton. And I mean, it would kind of be suspicious if you live in Alabama and you know how much power Republicans actually have, unlike a lot of liberal Democrats like AOC, who's born and raised in New York and may not be familiar with how much power Republicans actually have. You'd think his responses were kind of fishy, right? So then when he's commenting on Alabama Liberal, his ISP addresses go from Ohio to Dothan, Alabama in like a few minutes. So it's like, okay, why are you Ohio 1 minute? And then a few minutes later, you're in Dothan, Alabama. So I got curious and I knew it was the same guy who was on Twitter. So I went and I'm like, well, I hadn't seen him on Twitter in a long time. He's no longer following me. But I went and looked up his Twitter account. And now it doesn't say like Alabama anything. It's got a backdrop of the New York City skyline as though he lives in New York City. So I'm almost like, this guy was trying to manipulate the Alabama Liberal podcast, even though apparently he's in Ohio, or so his ISP address says, that a few minutes later he's in Dothan, Alabama, which makes me think he's using one of those scramblers or the St. Petersburg troll farms that move all this stuff around. And then he's got the backdrop of the New York City skyline. So I'm like, this is a total fake. His profile picture is different. He no longer uses a real picture. He barely had any followers to begin with. He only cares about, you know, shitting on Democratic Party figures. His ISP addresses are all over the place. He's a fake. And so I was basically catfished by a Bernie Sanders supporter in order to get me to be more lenient on Bernie Sanders. It was all about trying to get Bernie Sanders more favorable coverage with rural voters and red state voters and things like that. And then the second it became clear that I wasn't going to do that, it's almost like, fuck this guy. Now I'll go be a New York liberal and now I'll go try to catfish them and do something else and change it in that way. So I'm just saying, on social media, you got to be real careful because you don't know who you're talking to. This guy even used real pictures to begin with, and he had a kid in his pictures. So I was thinking, like, I'm a family man from Alabama. Maybe he is too. Watch what you do on social media and who you interact with. And I appreciate your time. Thank you for listening. I think we've diagnosed a huge threat that's inside social media. And I can't wait to talk to you in episode 63, which is coming up shortly. So thanks for listening, everybody. I really appreciate your time.